It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to the Andy Staples Show, a rare, rare in-person edition live from Casa de Wasserman. Ari's here. Chris Vanini's here. We have been eating barbecue, watching college football. Cannot imagine a better Saturday if you are anyone except for Scott Frost. But I did want to say, Ari, happy Brett Bielema Day. Chris, happy Brett Bielema Day, because every day is Brett Bielema Day.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank both of you for coming over and being in my home. I hope Andy got a nice solid look at that backyard, because I hope by the time this football season's over, he will have mowed it at least one time.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I'm going to be your butler for some bet that I lose, though. We are currently watching UCLA destroy Hawaii right now. Hawaii on the verge of scoring. It's 44-3. If Hawaii comes back, I promise we'll re-record the podcast. But I am still not the least bit worried about our bet for next week, where I have given you 15 points with UCLA against LSU. The loser of that bet has to take the Will Levis challenge, which is eat a banana, peel and all. I still think LSU is going to be just fine. I don't know how to break this, everybody. Hawaii may not be very good.
Yeah, that's the way I'm looking at it, too. We started recording this podcast midway through the third quarter of the Hawaii-UCLA game, because UCLA is too good, too big, too strong, too fast, and too damn talented to even continue watching the end of that football game. You think LSU is going to walk into Pasadena next week and win by more than 15? You're insane. Look at this team. It's a team full of Greek gods.
They actually do look very good. It's just that when you see them compared to the LSU players next week, they're going to look very different. So that's going to be all right. We have another game we need to talk about, though, and that is the first one. Nebraska, Illinois, 30-22. By the way, the total on this game was 52.5. By the way, Nebraska missed two PATs. There was so much with this, but the main thrust of it is we now have many, many multiple message board posts positing replacements for Scott Frost at Nebraska, because I know it's one game in, and I know we always overreact, but this really feels like there's no chance he succeeds there.
I just want to say one thing before we go into this game a little bit further. The Nebraska-Illinois game had the following: a safety, an illegal forward pass on a punt return that didn't end up counting at the end, but was one of the most insane things.
Spectacular, though.
Because the forward pass was going to nobody.
It was a question from a referee's exam, is what it was. Yes. This will never happen in a game, so let's throw this at him.
Two missed extra points. A coach not knowing or forgetting what down it was in a crucial come-from-behind situation.
Oh, the quarterback sneak on first and goal?
Yes. Yes. A 75-yard touchdown run. A scoop and score. A snag from over, or a snap that went over the quarterback's head. And a team trying to overcome a 21-point deficit. And that game's total, as you guys pointed out, was 52.5, and it missed by a half a point because of two missed extra points. And if I don't like, what else can you get from a college football game? That's all I need to see.
Yeah, the NFL and college football both have a lot of bad football, but bad college football, there's nothing like
it. It's so much better than bad NFL football. Yes,
I think bad college football is the best version of college football. And if we're being completely honest, I think 90% of the sport is bad college football.
I think you're probably right. But here's the thing, and this is the part that I think Nebraska fans understand, because they're a very savvy fan base, and it's what makes them feel even worse. Because you hear Scott Frost after the game saying, I know this team is better. I know we have better players than we had before. It just feels like the same movie over and over again, but I know we'll get that spark, and eventually this can be a special season. And Nebraska fans are looking at it going, no. If you can't beat that Illinois team, what are you going to do when you're playing Ohio State? Well, you have no shot. But what are you going to do when you're playing Wisconsin? What are you going to do when you're playing Northwestern? What are you going to do when you're playing Michigan State? Because that Illinois team, what are they going to go? 5-7?
Something like that. I mean, if Illinois can move the ball on the ground like they did at various times, just imagine what Iowa and Wisconsin and everybody else is going to do.
It's just not good. Now, we have been reading a little bit of the message boards. I think if you look at some of the threads, I think Ari and I's particular favorite thread just started with the words "hog fan" here.
Didn't even need to click on it. Didn't even need to click on it to know that was the perfect thread. But you know, I think that we just discovered a few Twitter accounts that are highlighting some of these terrible threads. But I like "hog fan" here. I'm out. My condolences from Ohio. Was going to say I would not come to Lincoln. Frost needs to be ASAP. I don't know what that means, but he needs to be something ASAP. You know, the list goes on and on. So some of these things are very typical from a normal fan base, but I think that you're also reading a message board or message boards from a fan base that is just basically at the end of its rope. And, you know, the thing that I thought was interesting, Andy and Chris, was when we started talking about where, because we were talking about the Illinois game a few weeks ago, and when we were talking about that game and we were thinking, what is this going to mean for the Frost era? You know, we put it out there and said, hey, this is going to define a lot of things. And I saw a lot of pushback from Nebraska fans saying, who thinks that Scott Frost is on the hot seat? This is a media created thing.
Well, that was 2 days before the NCAA investigation came out.
Yeah.
When we did that podcast.
But even if you take the NCAA thing out of it, which I think you could do because if they won today handily or they bounced back.
Right. I think you can take it out too, because all the NCAA investigation does is potentially lower the buyout. Doesn't eliminate it. You're going to have to settle with him. You try to fire him for free, you're going to get sued. But it potentially lowers the buyout. But it doesn't change whether he would have been fired or not after this season. Like, great season, he's fine. Terrible season, he's fired.
And people were so kind of blindsided, or it seemed to be blindsided, by the idea that you could even talk about a hot seat situation when it came to Scott Frost. And it's like, now I'm looking at the message boards and on Twitter, and I know that we have to be careful about letting the loud minority speak for the quiet majority.
I think the quiet majority is speaking right now too. The
quiet majority is speaking now too. I think that it's one thing to say, hey, we don't want to get carried away with a result, because it's one result. We joke a lot about overreacting early on in seasons. But, I mean, I don't understand. I don't think there is an overreaction to what game we just watched.
And this is Illinois 2 years in a row.
Right.
Adrian,
with two different coaches. And, oh, by the way, you knocked their starting quarterback out today.
Yes.
You lost to their backup. You lost to the guy who lost his job at Rutgers to the guy who left you.
And he was, what, 14 for 15 at some point? I don't remember what he finished.
Yeah, Sikowski had a good start to the game. And not because he was that great. It was they put him in good situations. Illinois' coaching staff put him in situations that allowed him to be successful.
Yes.
At what point is Nebraska's coaching staff going to put its quarterback in situations where he can be successful? And one of those situations could be, if this particular quarterback can't be successful, then put a different one in.
Yeah, and that was the first game of the Brett Bielema, Tony Peterson era. We've seen this from Scott Frost and Adrian Martinez for years now. And, you know, Scott Frost said he didn't want to transfer quarterback. He was all in on Adrian Martinez, who had some big runs and some things, but otherwise, and was running for his life quite a bit, but otherwise it was kind of a mess.
Yeah, and when you look at, like, the idea of just wins and losses, this is something that I tried to communicate to, is it's not so much about just losing a close game or losing a game. It's the entire aura of dysfunction that you see when watching the game. I mean, it's like everything that could go wrong went wrong. You have a punt returner, and we all like to joke about it, and it's fun during the game. But when you're trying to analyze a coach and how they're doing, you know, you have a punt returner who's fielding a punt for no reason at all, because he shouldn't even ever try to
Shouldn't be trying to catch a ball going backward toward the goal line like that.
That person went into the end zone and then as he was going down, put his arm back to put the ball back even further behind the end zone, then threw it forward to nobody. You know, that's just maybe a boneheaded play and whatever. But, you know, you're forgetting downs. You're having a quarterback continuing
to play. I don't think they forgot the down, but the sneak situation was weird because for those of us watching it on TV, the TV messed it up. They said it was 4th-and-1. It was a very close call on a 3rd-and-short play near the goal line, and the referee gave it to them. They gave them the first down, but TV didn't pick up on them giving the first down. So it said 4th-and-1 on the chyron. But if you're in the stadium, you saw him move the chains.
Right. The coaches are not looking at the TV broadcast. Yeah, someone on the headset has to be like, hey, that's a first down. Who is looking at the chains? They're like, you have a lot of coaches on headsets in press boxes for that specific thing.
You're down 14 points with less than 5 minutes to go after inexplicably milking the entire fourth quarter clock on a drive. You need to know what down it is because they had to convert their touchdown on 4th-and-goal because they already gave away a down. Because that was a 1st-and-goal down that they
gave. Here's the thing. You're killing them for milking the drive. I was thinking about this as it was going on. That's the only way they can move the ball. They don't have a quick way to move the ball. So we can criticize them, but what we need to criticize them for is not developing the offense enough that when they need to score quickly, they can. They could only move it the one way. And if they tried something else, they would have just gone 3 and out. And so that in itself is a problem.
Yeah. So, and regardless of how you put it too, the overall look of dysfunction is a combination of lack of preparation, lack of getting the most out of the talented players that you have on that roster, because Nebraska is a more talented roster than Illinois from top to bottom. And then of course you have the in-game decision-making and results that happen circumstantially that they weren't prepared for or missed out on.
Do you think they misunderstand their talent level there? Do you think the coaches at Nebraska have an accurate read on the talent at Nebraska?
If you took the N off of their helmet and changed their colors into something generic and you watched that team play Illinois, who would you thought that team was?
Purdue?
Purdue is the answer. Yeah. And I don't know if it's because they don't have the talent or because they're mismanaging that talent. Because you're talking about a program that does, on average, sign a top 25 class every single year, which is infinitely better than a Purdue.
Because they're coaching it like when you see LSU play against South Carolina, basically. Like, they're coaching it like there's that big of a talent discrepancy.
Yeah. And I mean, they look slow. Illinois is beating them to the edge on outside runs, and for a Nebraska team that's supposed to be recruiting this kind of talent, you just look at them, and at least from that standpoint, it's not there.
Yeah, it's a very strange look, and that's why I asked the question, because I do wonder if maybe they just don't grasp that they are not as talented as they think they are.
Yeah, well, that's a good question, because the question was, do they – ask it again.
Do you think the coaches have a good read on Nebraska's talent?
So are you asking if I think that they do feel the coaches, more talented than they are?
No. Right. Do the coaches think that they have better talent than they actually have?
I think that's possible. I think that they are misevaluating the players that they need out of high school and believing from the get-go that they're getting something better than they're getting.
And I will tell you how this compounds, not in an on-field way and not necessarily in a coaching or anything having to do with the players. This compounds by the way the sunshine gets blown around Nebraska during the offseason, because Nebraska football is the biggest thing in Nebraska. It's the thing you cover. It's the thing you write about the most. It's the thing you talk about the most. And so there's all these off-season stories, and they're always talking about how great every recruit is.
Yes.
and how this was the best strength program in the history of the world. Workouts that you couldn't even believe were possible. But it always ends up being the same thing. And the fan base, it's not their fault. They're fed this every off-season, and so they expect something better, and this is what they get.
At what point do fans not believe that anymore? I mean, Michigan,
I think they're probably done now.
Michigan fans don't believe that you know, Jim Harbaugh is going to turn it around until they see it now.
This crazy stat that got thrown out. And I wish I had it up on Twitter to give the person proper credit. But Scott Frost would have to go 37-1 from this point forward to match Jim Harbaugh's current record at Michigan. Yes.
We compare these coaches and Tom Herman a lot, like the dream hires that aren't working, but they're not working on very different levels.
Right. Herman was a few points away from playing for the Big 12 title last year.
Yes, Jim Harbaugh was an inch away from potentially making the playoffs. Scott Frost's record doesn't even come close to Mike Riley's tenure. That's the problem.
We'll be right back after these words. We talk about our favorite message board post. This one from Jack Attack 30 is probably my favorite. This is basically who Jack Attack 30 would be going after. A lot of the Nebraska fan base has already turned the page and is just trying to find Scott Frost's replacement. See if Luke Fickell or Matt Campbell have interest with the Big 12 losing OU in Texas. Maybe Campbell is ready to move on. Doubt it.
No.
Well, okay. Not to Nebraska. But
that's what I mean.
If you're Matt Campbell, you might reevaluate the Iowa State job.
Matt Campbell's not going to Nebraska.
Let me ask you something. And this might, I don't want to veer the conversation completely out of the realm. But we were joking during the game, and you've said in the past, Andy, that you feel like Nebraska could have Wisconsin-like results.
Yes.
So I'll just say it now. It seems like the coach they could have or should have hired would be Brett Bielema. Based on somebody who has gotten a program or sustained that success at the program that you're comparing them to. But that's not what I want to say. I'm very curious if a person like Matt Campbell, who I think you could make the argument has better recruiting geography in Iowa than you would at Nebraska, is the type of person you need to go after. Because I do kind of wonder sometimes if legacy or hiring people who have played there, alumni, connections, Michigan men, however you want to put it, the direct connection to the university is an overrated bullet point on a resume.
It is highly overrated. If you talk to our friends at Sports Source Analytics, they'll show you the numbers. Yeah, it doesn't mean anything.
Every year, it's something like a third of all coaches have been there before at some point.
Because if I were Nebraska, I would do everything in my power to do to find any coach who has had any semblance of success at a program that has terrible geography.
You need something. You need a guy who knows how to sell. You need a guy who's been at a disadvantage before from a recruiting standpoint. You need Lane Kiffin. Sorry, guys, he's not coming. But we got to get back to Jack Attack's list because it's better than ours. All right, so this is an interesting one. And I like that he's giving this job to this guy before he's even called a play, but I appreciate the hustle. Now, he's doing it because the guy's a Nebraska alum. Jake Peets, we know who he is. I'm not sure the average college football fan knows who he is. He is LSU's first-year offensive coordinator. He is going to lead LSU to piles of points and force Ari to eat a banana, peel and all, next week. That's who Jake Peets is. He was with the Carolina Panthers and Joe Brady last year. That's one candidate. Next candidate, Zach Taylor, the Cincinnati Bengals head coach.
An NFL head coach.
An NFL is sitting in a... Well, look, it's the NFL. They get fired all the time.
What about Bill Belichick while we're on the line? Why don't we add him?
Next one. There's a Bill. The next one's a Bill. Billy Napier from Louisiana. Billy Napier, who turned down South Carolina and Auburn. Billy Napier.
Billy Napier would be a great hire. Billy Napier will get an SEC job.
Turned down South Carolina and may have turned down Auburn. We're not sure about that. But turned down South Carolina.
Yeah. I love these lists. I guess we're making them now.
Wait. It gets better.
Yeah, keep going.
Next one, Tom Herman.
Here's the thing.
Wait, one more. Will Muschamp. That's Jack Attack's last one, last guy.
Here's the thing with Herman, though. Like, it wasn't a disaster at Texas.
No, it wasn't.
It was a top 25 team.
And I will defend the choice of Will Muschamp.
You know who else was a good hire? You know, 3 years ago, we all said Scott Frost.
Yep. And you're right. You're absolutely right. There, you can't do the revisionist thing and say, well, I knew all along he would. No, you didn't. I sure didn't.
An epidemic of coaches being recycled in football in general. Well, and I would just go get somebody new. Okay.
Here's my pitch for Will Muschamp, though. Will Muschamp can recruit, and he can recruit in Florida and Georgia and all that. Just tell Will Muschamp, get the most talented players who can't get in to any of those other schools and say Nebraska, you know, let them in.
You want to know what the craziest thing of this is? Nebraska's recruiting coordinator is a man named Sean Dillon. And Sean Dillon is like a super bright, personable guy who helped build Oregon. So like he was a part of a staff that had geographical challenges, you know, and
they overcame them
and overcame, not only just overcame them, but like excelled in a way that few programs have done in the modern era of college football. And I just feel like I feel bad because I know if you're in that position and you're bright, it might not be enough. And I think it's the question is it Scott Frost? Is it Sean Dillon? Is it a talent evaluation? Or is it just the circumstance of the university?
It's needing Lane Kiffin is what it is. You got to get somebody who can sell. I've kind of turned on the whole idea of Bielema being the guy. Like, I'm not sure Bielema would be the right guy for that job.
That's it. How many guys even are there? I mean, I look at a guy I think would have been good for the job is a guy who maybe could have waited for it, but instead took the Kansas job.
Lance Leipold. When you said that before we started recording, I was like, no, he can't. He's not a salesman. He's a builder type. And I need somebody who can go get some dudes from some places that are very far from Nebraska, and not just any old dudes from places far from, dudes that other people want. And they need to come to Nebraska because if you put a really talented team there, like
how talented?
I mean, if you put Mississippi State level talent at Nebraska, you can compete for the Big Ten West every year.
But can you get them to Nebraska?
That's the problem. That's the question.
Can anybody get them to Nebraska?
And I know people are going to go look at the recruiting rankings and say, well, they already have that. They already have Mississippi State level talent. I can tell you right now.
Are you looking at me opening it up, right? Is that what you were doing?
Yeah. But okay, I can tell you right now, I just watched Nebraska play. I've watched Mississippi State play.
By the way, the Bible has been presented to us from the heavens above.
Yeah.
Because the 2021.
The talent index is out?
Out. Yeah.
Wait for this.
It's really funny that you said that because Mississippi State is 29 and Nebraska is 28.
Okay. Mississippi State's two corners are going to be top three round picks in the NFL.
Yes.
Like, I think Nebraska didn't have anybody like that.
That's where it comes down to evaluation from your coaches. It's not just selling and getting guys there. It's knowing who the right guys are.
Just remind me before this podcast is over with, I want to, because Chris and I are sitting on the other end of the room from Andy. I want Andy to guess the top 10 of the talent.
Oh, yes, absolutely. That'll be a fun game. But we need to describe the geography of this room. I'm sitting in this lovely chair, a leather chair that Ari's fiance Britt picked out, and she has impeccable taste.
I know.
By the way, I saw the room with the throw pillows in question. It is beautifully appointed. Beautifully.
Nobody ever said that it wasn't beautiful to look at.
Those pillows are not that hard to set up. You got your two that you use, then you have your two with the shams, and then three decoratives, and then one in the front. It's not a big deal. Seven pillows.
Yeah, that's we'll show the bedroom before you. He hasn't been in the bedroom yet. But the question too is that it's not so much from when we're talking about talent is Nebraska getting across the board a pretty talented roster? Absolutely. The thing you want to know what I really think is missing when I watch Nebraska play, and it's something that Mississippi State has. So when you make that comment, it makes sense, even though they're close together in the team composite rankings. They don't have a lot of transcendent top end game-breaking players.
Speed,
but like just somebody who can make a play.
Yeah, somebody super special. Like,
while they were making their comeback, and I think Adrian Martinez, when he was a freshman, was supposed to be that guy. Who is the person that's going to step up and actually do something? And even when they were down by, a minute or down by seven with a minute left in the ball, you know, one of the threads on the wonderful 247 Nebraska site was where are all our fast receivers? I don't know that you have them, were all the fast receivers.
Yeah.
There was nobody there that I felt comfortable enough to be like, hey, that person's going to make a play when they need it.
Receivers can't get open. I mean, Adrian Martinez was running for his life. Part of that was on the offensive line, but part of that was guys weren't getting open.
Well, and Illinois was not throwing anything particularly exotic at them. Scott Frost did say they misjudged what Illinois' front was going to look like in terms of defending the run, but there wasn't anything particularly exotic Illinois was doing. It was a case of there either wasn't anybody open or Martinez wasn't getting rid of the ball fast enough, which you can probably blame either party a little bit, but you're right. There wasn't the one touchdown that they had to the tight end, both guys were open because it was blown coverage. But I can't really recall any other plays other than the one down the left sideline that got called back for OPI because of the rub.
Yeah.
So that, yeah, you're right. Nobody was winning one-on-one matchups between their receivers and Illinois secondary. And that should scare the hell out of you because, you know, Chris, your alma mater, they play them later. You went to Michigan State. We don't know how good Michigan State's going to be. I don't suspect they're going to be great, but I suspect they're going to have some athletes because Mel Tucker's been trying to get athletes.
It's exactly what Mel Tucker has been doing. You look at the – forget the star ranking. Look at the size of the guys he's going for. They're going for guys that are of a certain height and that are of a certain speed. And you know who used to do that was Jim Harbaugh. That's how he built San Diego.
You know who Mel Tucker got it from is – Nick Saban.
Yes, right. There's a standard in which you got to get certain guys as opposed to recruiting rankings or whatever you judge a guy. This game comes down to physical ability, speed, and strength. And Nebraska just doesn't look like it has that.
You know who does look like it has it?
Illinois?
UCLA.
I knew you were going to say that. I will say UCLA looks really good running the ball. I'm going to give Ari some credit on that one. I don't think Hawaii looked very good, but I am a little nervous about that bet next week. I think I gave you too many points, but I am going to pretend to be confident.
Yeah, we'll get back to the does this sound like a good time for a break? Because you have a surprise ad read that you have to read right now.
Oh, I do. Oh my. Okay. Oh. Is this from our friends that I thought we agreed not to retaliate on one another, but okay. First read, it says, read by Andy without any notice. The Duke's Mayo Classic is thrilled to be an official kickoff game partner of the Andy Staples Show. This year, the game features a delicious doubleheader with ECU and Appalachian State playing on Thursday, September 2nd, and Clemson and Georgia facing off on Saturday, September 4th. You don't want to miss out on these twangy matchups. They'll be full of flavor and sponsored by the best mayonnaise on the planet, Duke's Mayo, a proud supporter of the Andy Staples Show, which, by the way, they did not pay for that ad. Somebody just sent that to you, Ari. But I already did. I probably owed them that since I tried to consume their product and vomited on the air.
It was given to me by our producer to give to you as a surprise. So I think you read it beautifully, and I think you have some other talking points that you have to do about mayonnaise. But
I thought that
was a perfect – by the way, I'm not just saying this. I could eat Duke's mayonnaise with a spoon. Like I find it I think
we all know I can't.
But now we're just getting back into the bets and stuff. I don't know that UCLA will win the game next week against LSU, but I do feel pretty good about how physical they are. But here's the question I want to ask: Did I cut off Nebraska? Do we want
to? If you have more to say, or if you want to add to the Will Muschamp Tom Herman coaching candidate list, I'm all ears.
Okay, sorry for discombobulating it. I didn't know exactly when it would have been the perfect time to give you the Mayo ad. But going back to Nebraska, before we go back to UCLA, are we officially on board, or is this like hot season or hot seat season now? Like, is this, or are we over, like, because you said
it's week, overreact. It's week zero. We are overreacting, but I don't think we're overreacting that much. I think, listen, they're going to beat Fordham. If they lose to Buffalo, forget it. But
yeah.
I think they're going to beat Buffalo. They're going to lose to Oklahoma. We know that. So, look, we can reconvene the Scott Frost discussion after the Michigan State game. I feel like that's a realistic time to reconvene it. Because I think they're going to lose by a lot to Oklahoma. So if they lose by 50 to Oklahoma, it's not really going to change my opinion.
And that's what we would have thought even if they won 28-21.
Correct. And that's the other thing. Winning against Illinois might have been fool's gold for them. But this sort of really tells everybody where they are.
Yeah, and we know those games they got at the end of the season, the Ohio States and Wisconsin, I think.
And Iowa, yeah.
So they have to build up some wins before they get there, and they can, but the Illinois was one game, and Michigan State is going to
be another. That's going to be the question. Give me another mayonnaise read to read while I pull up the schedule. I've got I keep mixing up Fordham and Wagner. I keep thinking they're playing Wagner. They're playing Fordham. Joe Moorhead coached at Fordham. He was the head coach at Fordham for a bit. Okay, so we've mentioned that they play Buffalo, they play Oklahoma, and then at Michigan State on September 23rd. And that's the one I'm saying. If they lose that one, you probably going to have some bad feelings about this season because, all right, Fordham's a win, Buffalo's a win, Oklahoma's a loss. So you're sitting at two wins. You are now four wins from bowl eligibility, which I consider to be the bare minimum standard at this point. Michigan State, is that a win or a loss for Nebraska?
I do not know what to expect from Michigan State right now. I don't think they're going to be contending for the division.
So that's a coin flip.
That's one you're going to have to win, given the schedule. It's a coin flip, but they have to win it.
I think that's a loss. From what I saw on Saturday, that's a loss.
Okay.
Where is that game, by the way?
That's in East Lansing.
Okay, because yeah. Michigan State struggles in Lincoln.
Then they come back to Lincoln, and they play Northwestern.
You know, Pat Fitzgerald probably deserves benefit of the doubt. They won the division last year. The defense should be pretty good again. We'll see how Hunter Johnson looks. But, you know, these are the types of coin flip games Nebraska's going
to win. They have to win these. The next one's Michigan, which Ari and I have kind of ID'd. Because that's the one after Michigan plays Wisconsin, I believe. So we don't know where Michigan's going to be either on that at that point.
Yeah, I think the Michigan-Wisconsin game is going to be one of the most important games of the year in terms of determining the future of, you know, what the coach is going to be there. But if Nebraska and Michigan play the week after that game, that's another one.
Man, think about the hot seat energy potentially going into that game if Michigan has lost to Wisconsin.
Oh, it could be the hot seat, but you're like a loser leaves town.
Yeah.
The last loser leaves town match like that with programs of that stature and that the programs were better was the Auburn LSU game. Oh, that Les Miles got fired after.
I was thinking the Egg Bowl a couple years ago.
Because Gus would have been fired probably if they lose that game and maybe a little bit more that season. Yeah. That was 2016. They didn't have a great year in 15. 17 was the year that Auburn won the SEC West. So that was a big, big hot seat game and Les ended up getting fired. But it kind of look. You think about that. They may be in a situation where they have to beat Michigan, Minnesota, and Purdue to make a bowl game. And I don't know where Minnesota's going to be. I don't know where Purdue's going to be.
I don't know where a lot of these Big Ten teams
are. Yeah, that's the thing. And we haven't really gotten a good look at this. But let's say Minnesota bounces back. That's not going to be an easy game. Michigan, you know, we're assuming they bounce back from last season. Either way, that's still going to be, like, even when even bad Michigan last season against them, you know, it just, I don't know. I'm not confident that they can be bowl eligible.
No.
And imagine if I had said to somebody at Nebraska when they hired Scott Frost, in year four, you'll be wondering if they can even make a bowl game.
That's the problem. Like, what about this program has gotten better? Like, what are you leaning on? What are the signs of progress? There are none. And all the things that Scott Frost mentioned in his post-game press conference that they did wrong, mistakes that they've made. He said this loss felt like every loss we've had.
And that is the biggest, probably most damning thing about it, is if it's the same thing over and over, that's not the player's fault.
Nope.
That's the coach's fault.
We make a lot about eye test when we talk about the college football playoff stuff. I think that eye test is super important when it pertains to how you feel about a coach, the same way when Michigan gave up at Wisconsin last year, that kind of shifted the way people viewed Harbaugh.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that anybody on Nebraska gave up. They looked ill-equipped of competence.
Right. And the thing is, and I know, look, Scott Frost has been successful as a head coach. That UCF season happened. He was phenomenal that season.
It's very hard to go undefeated.
Yeah. He was awesome. So this is why it's hard to say this, but like Brett Bielema was the more competent head coach. And that's not really, it shouldn't be a surprise. Brett Bielema has been a head coach for a long time. It has been a while since he's been a head coach, but he was a very competent head coach at Wisconsin. For the first few years at Arkansas, he was a very competent head coach. So it makes sense that he was better prepared to deal with the kind of the breaks of the game, like losing your starting quarterback in the middle of the first half.
You can tell with just it feels like you can tell when things are going downhill for a coach and everything just snowballs and you can't stop it. And that if it's what we felt like, you missed your extra points, you get a safety when you're trying to throw the ball.
Well, and the play that the Nebraska people probably should come back to is the call where the guy gets called for roughing the passer and then gets an additional personal foul right afterwards, because it was basically a 30-yard penalty on what should have been a Nebraska interception.
Yeah.
And then Illinois goes down and scores. So, but if you're thinking that call is the difference, you're missing the entire point.
Yeah, I don't know.
You shouldn't even be in a close game with Illinois. No. You should be destroying Illinois if you are Nebraska.
Because here's the other thing, too. It's very possible that Illinois is a 3 or 4 win team this year.
Yeah, they didn't look great by any means. They just made more plays and they handled the adversity that came their way better. Nebraska completely crumbled. I mean, every time they'd get a big play, they'd give up a sack. They'd have a bad snap. They couldn't string it together. There was no sense of confidence on that Nebraska sideline.
Yeah, and so I just there's not much else to say about this other than we'll reconvene. I'm sure we'll talk about it as they move through the season, but I don't think there's anything substantive to say unless they lose to Buffalo. Then, in which case, we go back to our guys' list and just start calling people and be like, "Hey, you want the job? Do you want the job? Will Muschamp, do you want the job?"
Because we do think that Tom Herman's going to be a head coach in college football somewhere next year, right?
Either an OC at a super premium school or a head coach somewhere, yeah,
yes.
I would think.
That's just the way the game works. So, you know, hey, Will Muschamp.
Look at Brett Bielema. Brett Bielema's on his third job.
We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors. Ari, let's do some talent evaluation. Let's see how well we evaluate talent. I've been waiting for this talent composite to come out. I take it they were just waiting at 24/7 for the rosters to be finalized.
So here, before we get going, I looked closer after we got done looked up the Mississippi State stuff. I just opened it for the first time this year, which is like usually my homepage, but there are a few programs on here that only have like 73, 75, 76 players accounted for. And I don't know how complete this list is or if they're just still working through it. It looks kind of correct, but I don't know. Like, for instance, Georgia has 85 players
listed.
And
yeah.
Alabama has 76.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you add.
But there may have just been attrition.
Yeah, but I don't think that – Ohio State's got 75. I know they've got – I mean, there's – LSU's got 73.
Yeah.
There's no team.
That's like, is Quinn Ewers on the Ohio State list?
Right. You know, and I guess I could look right now.
This is good pod right here. Ari looking something up.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, I prematurely – why don't we just do it through the list, and then next week if it's wrong, then we'll tell them.
That's the way to podcast right there. Next week, if it's wrong, we'll just change it all.
So,
yeah.
So what do we do? Does Andy have to guess who is in the top 10 or guess the order?
I just want to guess the order of the top
10. Okay. Number one is still Georgia.
Yes.
Okay. And here's where 1980. Hey, Georgia hasn't done anything.
And according to this, Georgia has 19 five-star prospects on their roster. That is literally a quarter of a roster.
It's a lot more than anybody else on this list.
Everybody else on this list, the second highest is 11.
Yeah.
So if this is an incomplete list, then that's fine.
And also Georgia doesn't play Alabama or LSU or Texas A&M in the regular season.
Did you notice that you and I had identical predictions?
Yes, I did.
Because, like, I mean, if Georgia doesn't do it this year, then I'm never picking them to do it.
No, I agree. I agree. This is the clearest path they've ever had and probably the biggest talent advantage they'll have over the other.
I mean, if you have 5 more 5-star prospects than Bama.
Yeah, like, exactly.
I mean, and you have a competent quarterback and a coach. I mean,
right.
This is it.
There are no excuses this year for them. No excuses. All right. Number two, Ohio State.
Nope.
Bama.
Bama.
Okay.
Yes. Bama's number two with 76.
You threw me by saying they had 76 players. That's the only reason I thought Ohio State might be above them.
Yeah.
Here's one more thing. The difference between Georgia and Alabama is the same between 2 and 3.
Interesting. Okay. And so Ohio State is 3, I take it.
Nope.
No.
Clemson is 3, and I didn't mean to blow it.
Oh, no,
this is making me feel like this is wrong.
That's interesting that Clemson is 3.
Because Clemson has 83 players accounted for.
And
Ohio State has 75. So I don't know. I think that we might have jumped the gun here a little bit.
Oh, no. Somebody hit the load button on this thing before they were done?
Like to me. We'll
I think Georgia and Alabama 1-2 is a pretty safe assumption. But before we just go,
could Alabama jump Georgia if there's a few players missing? I mean,
it doesn't look like it.
Okay,
it's a pretty big gap.
No, there's nine. They're not, according to this, they're nine below. Alabama's nine scholarships below Auburn. I mean, Georgia for the number one spot, and Georgia has eight more five-star prospects. So
okay, so they're probably not jumping them. Okay, but that's interesting because it. I get why people like to make fun of Georgia and say they haven't done anything. But the fact of the matter is they've won three of the last four SEC championships. They did win the SEC in 2017 and played for a national title. Like, they've been right there. Last year was the farthest they've been, and that's Florida's best team of that era that beat them when they were starting a former walk-on and completely nicked up on defense. They've built such a prohibitive advantage in the SEC East that you got to have them in there every year.
They have a playoff win. Oklahoma doesn't have
it. I know.
This is not the same thing.
That was my favorite thing on Twitter when I mentioned, you know, because people were wondering why Georgia got to sit at the Mean Girls table from the last podcast.
Right.
And some Oklahoma fan said, "What has Georgia done?" I said, "Has one more playoff win than Oklahoma." And it was against Oklahoma.
It was an overtime, but it was still, it's a win.
Yeah.
Also, the Mean Girls table, I guess the way I viewed it was the Mean Girls table of how you're recruiting. And I think obviously how you're recruiting, it goes hand in hand with how you're performing. And those are the top five performing programs, especially if they've been in a national championship game more recently, obviously, than Oklahoma.
Well, and that's the Florida fans get on Georgia all the time because Florida's got three national titles since Georgia's last national title. So they have every right to crow about that. But if we want to talk about recent, you know, Florida hasn't been in the SEC championship, or they've been in the SEC championship game, but they haven't won the SEC since 2008. And Georgia won it in 2017. And Ari's got Fast and the Furious going on outside his house.
This is not...
I live my life a quarter mile at a time.
Yeah, I don't know what that was. But yeah, so Andy was making fun of me for saying that Georgia is going to exceed expectations.
Well, they're not. They're going to meet them if they win the national title.
Yes, they're
going to
meet them. That's what it is.
They can't exceed them because they're expected to win the national title now.
I don't think very many people expect them to win the national
title. I do. I think Mark Richt was fired and Kirby Smart was hired expressly for them to win the national title. That is the entire point of the enterprise at Georgia.
Yeah, we there was some our colleague David Ubbin pointed it out on Twitter. It relates to Nebraska, where you fire a coach who's winning decently because you think you should do better. It almost never works out. One place it has is Georgia, because Georgia has all the...
And immediately people are like, what have they done?
Yes, they've won the SEC and played for the national championship and nearly won it, too.
And have also squandered more talent than any program.
Absolutely. And deserve the criticism they get for what happened with Justin Fields and for not... Like, the 2018 SEC championship game, you can't make excuses for that.
No.
They should have won that. They should have been in the playoff that year. That's their fault.
It's also just part of the equation, too, and it's easy to say squandered, but, you know, college football is about circumstance, and Georgia's circumstance is not ideal for winning a national championship right now based on who's standing in their way, and I think you could say the same thing about Texas A&M. If you put Texas A&M in the coastal division of the ACC,
yeah,
you would think they were going to win the national championship maybe this year or compete for it, and, like, now Texas A&M is, what, the third or fourth SEC team that comes to mind when you think about winning at all? And it's like, it's not because Texas A&M isn't built really well, especially now, a year removed from last year. I mean, they've really...
So, all right, let me give you this question, because you always get on me when I try to talk up any other Big Ten team that isn't Ohio State. And you say, you know, there's no...
None of them are built like Texas
A&M. There's nobody in the Big Ten within 10 points of Ohio State. Would Texas A&M be competitive? If they were in the Big Ten, would we be talking about it like it was a two-horse race?
Yes, absolutely.
And this kind of comes back to, again, Oklahoma leaving the Big 12 for the SEC, where it's going to be a much tougher path. Is it better to be that...
Playoffs got to expand. If the playoff expands, it's not a problem.
Well, right, but we'll see where that is in a moment.
Kevin Warren, and I quote, "I'm a big fan of playoff expansion."
Just not for another 4 or 5 years, but...
That's fine. Oklahoma might not be there for another 4 years.
That's the funniest thing about, and it's like, I don't know if we want to keep talking about expansion. I know people's ears are bleeding with the stuff already. But from a tactical standpoint, in terms of revenue and prestige and, you know, how much money Texas A&M is bringing in, there's no question that it's the most lucrative situation for Texas A&M right now. But if you took Texas A&M and put them in any other Power 5 conference, their stature in the sport would be completely different.
But would they have this roster now if they'd never joined the SEC? I think there's a chicken egg thing here.
No, well,
Texas is the chicken. Okay,
no,
so
yeah, well, I think no. I mean, Sam Conn and I did the Texas Recruiting Confidential, and we asked high school coaches if being in the SEC matters, and they said to a lot of players it does. And A&M's recruiting has shown that.
Yeah, A&M doesn't have this roster if it's not an SEC school for the past 10 years.
I think you can make that case. I wrote a story right when the expansion stuff broke, comparing the recruiting results from A&M and Texas once A&M joined the SEC, and they're pretty dramatically different.
Yeah.
So, but it's not – I don't know. Yeah, they might not be built like Georgia Light – but I think they would still be built more sturdily than sturdily.
Yeah, sturdily is a word. Absolutely.
Than other programs in the Big Ten that are trying to take their place. Like, I think they'd be more sturdy than Penn State.
But to your point of circumstance, I mean, about being in the Coastal, like at Clemson, that's Georgia's circumstance this year with that schedule.
And that's right. Why now we don't know. Florida could be really good. Like, if Emory Jones is a really good quarterback, Florida still could be a challenger to Georgia in the East. But the problem is Florida's got to play Alabama and LSU. Georgia gets Auburn and Arkansas from that side, and we don't know what Auburn is. We know Arkansas is not going to be Alabama or LSU. So Georgia has the better path. Now, last year, Florida had the better path. Last year, Georgia had to go to Tuscaloosa. Florida had to play LSU, but it was a down LSU, and they managed to lose to them anyway.
Yeah. Basically, the thesis of this is if Georgia doesn't win the national championship this year, then I'm going to type into my Twitter account 1980.
you're going to become one of the 1980 people. I'm with you. I don't know if they have to win it, but they do have to make the playoff. They do have to be in contention for it at the end.
What do you think would be a successful season for Georgia? Simply making the playoff or winning a playoff game?
That depends on the matchup. That depends on who you end up getting matched up with at the beginning of the playoff.
That game when you asked that question about Oklahoma. It doesn't matter who Oklahoma's playing. You want to see them win a playoff game.
Well, you do. But what if Georgia gets matched up with Oklahoma?
Then one of them's going to
fail. Would you rather them get matched up with Oklahoma or Alabama if you're Georgia? In the semis.
I'd rather watch games that haven't happened already.
Okay. Yeah. That game probably will have happened. And probably will have just happened.
And also the result matter. Other than that one overtime game, Oklahoma's playoff, you know, run.
They haven't been close. They've, no. Yeah. So, now, the one against Alabama when they had Kyler Murray was closer than people remember, but it wasn't ever in doubt because Alabama had three stops right away, scored off all of them, and was up 28-0. So, like, after that, it was... So
if Georgia makes the playoff, loses a close game to an Alabama, is that considered a success or no? I say no.
It will not be considered a success.
No.
The whole point of firing a successful coach in Mark Richt and hiring a different coach in Kirby Smart was to get better results.
But the
better result they want is a national title. Now, does it mean you're going to fire Kirby Smart? No.
No.
But it doesn't. You're also not going to be satisfied.
When Mark Richt was the head coach at Georgia, the state of Georgia was a revolving door for elite level players from Atlanta and the surrounding areas to leave the state. Like, what Kirby Smart has done from a recruiting standpoint is the entire reason why there's been an elevation of the program. And, like, I don't know for sure, you know, maybe you guys would have a better take on who was a better on the field coach or which coach made better tactical decisions, but there's no question which coach builds their roster better.
Yeah. And with Kirby, remember when he was in the national championship game, that was as a second year head coach. The whole Jake Fromm, Justin Fields thing as a third year head. Now, I mean, he's a 6-year head coach now. There's really no excuses anymore for tactical errors or for choosing the wrong player, that sort of thing. You don't get a pass on that anymore.
I think the general baseline expectation for Georgia, I don't know, like, are Georgia fans sitting at home saying national title or bust right
yes,
now?
Yes, they are.
Or are people saying, we haven't been in the playoff for 3 years. We're playing in the really tough SEC conference. I just want to make the playoff.
They are saying, if you're good enough to win the SEC, you're good enough to win the playoff. You're good enough to win the whole thing.
Yeah.
But I think it's possible to make the playoff without winning the SEC.
It is possible. But here's what I'm telling you. Will Josh Brooks, Georgia athletic director, even consider doing anything about Kirby Smart if they don't win a national title this year? No, of course not. Will the majority of Georgia fans be bitterly disappointed if they don't win a national title with this team? Yes, they will.
Yeah,
and they'll be justified.
I think back to like the Detroit Tigers of like the early 2011, 12, 13. They had all those Cy Young winners, MVPs. Yep. They made the World Series once, the ALCS a couple times. And they get to these big series and they just can't hit anymore or something like that. Like there's at some point, there's nothing you can do. You just have to do it.
Yeah.
And that's where
Georgia would the Bills fans have traded the other three Super Bowl runs, the other three AFC titles for Norwood's kick to just go in?
Yep.
Yes, they would have.
Exactly. The talent is there. They have 19 five-star players. So there's not much different that Georgia and Kirby Smart need to do other than just do it.
That also might be a record. I'm going to go back and look that up, but I don't know if anybody's ever had a quarter of their roster consisting of five.
Yeah, it's essentially almost an entire – I mean, it's not going to be spread out that way, but it, you know, almost just starting 22. And that's wild to think about. But that's why we keep giving them the benefit of the doubt, is because they have a level of talent that other programs just don't.
Yeah, also, next time you're on Twitter and you want to type it, Andy, Chris, or I, what has Georgia done? That's the answer.
Yeah. And that more than anything else puts you in a position to compete for a national title. It doesn't win it for you, but it puts you in the game. And as we've discussed, and as everybody knows, unfortunately, we wish it were different, but there's only about six programs in the game right now for a national title.
The only other team going back, I'm at 2017, that's come close to 19 five stars in a season is Alabama. And they had 18 in 2017. And these years run together to me. Who won the national title in 2017?
I believe that was Alabama.
That was the Alabama. That was the year they beat Georgia.
That's right. So
I just got a text message from Britt, and she said that you have a wonderful radio voice and that she likes him.
Oh, I love it. That's awesome. That's the first time anybody's ever said that, because I actually kind of sound like someone stepping on a duck when I talk.
Have you considered doing radio before?
Once or twice.
I hope that Britt just fostered your ability to get a big raise from a few potential radio employers.
Hey, listen.
She knows how to make a deal.
We got Big Mayo sponsoring us now. If I can nearly vomit up the product and they want to sponsor us, are they really sponsoring us?
Yes.
Or was this a fake?
The Duke Mayo people got in contact
with me. They actually paid for... Oh, they got...
They got in contact with me, and then I forwarded them over to our producer, John Hayes, and they worked it out.
They are paying for this.
Yes, that wasn't a joke.
Well, I love Duke's Mayo. I take back everything I vomited last season.
I actually do love, like, I, and I'm actually bitterly disappointed that I didn't get one of the Duke's Mayo care packages.
Well, I think they'll probably send you one.
Everybody's opening up these mini helmets and a little, I would have actually used the mayonnaise.
I didn't get one either. So,
I live in the South. I'm surrounded by mayonnaise loving people. Duke's is their favorite.
And we live in Texas, where they instantly put it on all your burgers unless you tell them not to.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not making that up just because, you know, we have a good relationship and we like to have fun with them on Twitter. For the people who like mayo, that is their choice. And it is almost universal. I've never heard anybody say, I got to have some other brand. I hear people a lot saying, I got to have Duke's. So listen, you know you've made it as a podcast, gentlemen, when your most hated condiment comes to you and says, please talk about us on the air. This is a milestone. And we had an in-person show and we got to watch college football. College football is back. It's going to be amazing because we watched bad games and had fun. Imagine what it's going to be like when the games are good.
Imagine what it's going to be like when UCLA and LSU finish that game.
Imagine what it's going to be like when you vomit up a Chiquita banana.
Oh no, Ari. I want you to buy that banana like 4 days in advance. Get it nice and brown before you eat that thing. The one Will Levis was eating was very spotty. So we got to get it spotty and brown. No green bananas. Because I'm not going to be buying one. I'm not going
to
need it.
Yeah, I mean, you have to buy one, but...
Well, when are you going to buy it? Like, you're going to have to buy it.
Well, the bet gets paid off on the Friday following, so...
So I guess you don't have to buy it until after,
but so
you
yeah,
buy it on Sunday.
When LSU wins by 15 or more, you probably will have to go to the grocery store within the next day or so and buy one.
So how long until it gets brown? Does that typically?
I think, you know, it take 2 or 3 days to get brown.
Yeah.
Okay. We don't want it complete. We don't want it to look like a ripe plantain. We want it to be spotty. There needs to still be some yellow on the peel. Because I don't want to try to eat a completely brown peel. I think this will go better.
Take this bet, and this is one thing I wanted to correct you on too.
Okay,
because you said to Stanford Steve last week that you had to get me to take the bet. I was on UCLA's side before you added the 10 points.
Dang, I could have done this for 4.5.
Yeah, because I was like, I think this is going to be a good game, and you were like, you were crazy, and you were like, I'll give you 10 more points, okay?
Have you thought that maybe I just wanted to sweat a little bit? Because I wouldn't have been sweating at all at 4.5 points.
Because, like, you know what I think you should do? I think you should actually bet on it if you're so excited about it, but I don't know if that's allowed. So, you know, Chiquita Banana will be a sponsor of our podcast eventually, so.
Because one of us may be vomiting you up, too. Stay tuned.